Eddie, the 10-Year Reunion. Copyright 2020 by Dr. Robert E. Z. Chapter 1. New Projects, Part 1. It's been nearly 10 years since Eddie and most of the tribe have walked the halls of Northside High School. Not much has changed at the high school over the years, except for, perhaps, several teachers and administrators who are no longer around, and a few new faces in the front of the classrooms. Among those who are now history is the former principal, Mr. Crum, who did everything in his power to prevent Eddie from graduating from high school. Also, not seen in a long time walking the halls of the high school is Mr. Brian, whose unscrupulous activities included failing athletes for personal financial gain. The high school track where Eddie and the rest of the tribe made history was removed as soon as school let out for the summer. In the red zone, the grass is all gone, and all that remains in the center of the oval track is dirt. The bleachers have been removed, as have the team benches. The curb that Mark and Louis Zeno put a lot of effort to install 6 years ago offers a subtle hint that there was once a track in the area that now looks so barren. Summer school lets out for the day, and Eric Johnson, now the head track coach at Northside High School, walks out to where the track once was. Staring out at the desolate grounds, a bit of sadness comes over the former track star. Recalling his years when he once ran for Northside High School, Johnson realizes that he will never again see the old gravel track that hosted victory after victory for his own high school team and the teams he has coached. All that remains of the now defunct venue are a few photographs of the meets and memories in Johnson's mind. A voice is heard from out in a distance, yelling out to Johnson, "What do you think?" Johnson yells back, "It's looking good." Johnson walks over to where the shot put pad once was, where Mark is standing alone. Mark tells him, "We're going to start putting the irrigation system in for the red zone on Monday. John should be here first thing in the morning with his crew." Eddie's brother, John, after graduating from the university with a degree in business, now runs a very successful landscaping company. The demolition of the old track has been completed. Arriving at the job site earlier today, Mark is checking to make sure everything is up to spec before the construction of the new venue begins early next week. Johnson, who is looking forward to the new track, is staying on top of the situation, coming outside every day before he heads home to check on the progress. Wanting to know what will be transpiring over the next few months, Johnson asks Mark, "What's the plan, bro? What's next?" Mark explains, "We work from the inside out. After the irrigation goes in, the pads will be poured for the launching points for the field events. After that, we'll put in the sod. Then, the company that installs the track will be here. They'll take care of the track itself and finish the launching areas. Then, once they are done, the bleachers and team benches will go in." Johnson asks, "Where's the VIP section going?" Mark replies, "Across from the bleachers on the other side of the track, right near the finish line." Johnson tells Mark what he's told him many times before, "I can't thank you guys enough for this. I really appreciate this." Eddie and Mark, making millions of dollars in the stock market, and by buying and selling gold, have personally bankrolled the high school's new track and field venue. Also making a lot of money in the stock market, Bobby B. put up the money for the field area. The new all-weather track and field venue will be a vast improvement over the outdated gravel track that was originally installed 30 years ago. And, within the high school's division, the new track will be the envy of all the other teams' coaches. Identifying a specific area of the venue, Mark informs Johnson, "Your bench is going over there, between the storage building and the curve in the track." Walking over to where the bench will be with Mark, Johnson asks, "My bench? Why specifically here?" Mark explains, "In the afternoon, that area is shaded by the trees. It will give you an advantage on a hot day. And you'll have power at your bench so you can use that biggest fan and bring a small refrigerator out here." Johnson comments, I didn't even think about any of that. Mark continues to explain, on this side of the track, the other bench will be near the other curve. The other two benches, for a four-way meet, will be on the other side of the track, in approximately the same area. We're running power to the other benches as well. Otherwise, they'll have to bring one mother of an extension cord. And if there are more than four teams competing, there'll be some temporary benches that can be brought out. Johnson replies, awesome. Mark asks Johnson, have you seen Zeno around here recently? Johnson replies, yeah. He was around here earlier this week with John and a surveying crew. Mark replies, good. They were marking where the irrigation lines go. Johnson mentions, Zeno was asking what you want to do with the pile of gravel from the old track. Mark explains, we're going to reuse it and put it deep under the sand track. That will help with drainage. We'll start on that next week sometime. Johnson points out, you thought of everything. Mark confesses, actually, Dr. Zunde came up with that idea. Set 20 feet away and parallel to the back straightaway will be a 130 meter long sand track, similar to the one at the university. Mark tells Johnson, well, everything here looks good. I'm going to head out and get cleaned up before we head out for pizza tonight. Johnson asks Mark, are you bringing the kids? Mark replies, not tonight. My parents are babysitting. The kids are spending the night there. Johnson tells Mark, okay, bro. I'll catch you at the pizzeria. Mark gives Johnson a fist bump and heads home. Johnson, teaching physical education over the summer to those who failed the class this past year, walks back to the school, glad that it's Friday. On the other side of town, Eddie's closing up shop, getting ready to go home. Bobby B, who is now a full-fledged mechanic, reminds Eddie, don't forget. I won't be here next week. Eddie replies, that's right. You're working with John, over at the high school, putting in the irrigation system. Bobby B asks, do you know what he'll be having me doing? Eddie replies, yeah. He has a few miles of PVC and polyethylene pipe to lay for the irrigation system and only has 2 weeks to get the project done. So, he needs all the help he can get. Johnson's even going to be there after he gets off work to help. As Eddie is setting the alarm, Bobby B laughs and tells Eddie, I bet I'll be carrying pipe all day. I'll just turn it into a workout. Eddie replies, you're out of luck, bro. John has a Cushman and a trailer to move the pipe. From what I hear, Wendy will be the runner, driving the Cushman, delivering the pipe, and other supplies to the workers. Bobby B surmises, someone has to load the trailer with the pipe. Eddie replies, oh, yeah. That might be you. Bobby B then mentions, Wendy always liked driving the Cushman when we were in high school. Eddie sets the alarm, locks the door, and tells Bobby B, I'll catch you guys at the pizzeria later, bro. Bobby B replies, we'll be there. Over at the university, enjoying a quiet day, Braden stops by to say hello to Mr. Fraser, whom he sees quite often. Making a few rounds in the late afternoon, Braden knocks on the coach's door, announcing, how come you're still here? Mr. Fraser replies, Athena and I were going over the stats on the incoming freshmen. We're looking really strong for next year. Braden asks, are you gonna win all the gold medals again this year? Mr. Fraser replies, it sure does look that way. We might even stand a chance of winning the gold, silver, and bronze medals in every event, like we did when you guys were seniors. Braden boasts, I still can't believe we pulled that shit off. Those were good days. Braden asks his former coach, have you been over at the high school recently? Mr. Fraser replies, I met Gerhard for lunch one day during finals week, but I haven't been there since school let out for the summer. Braden informs Mr. Fraser, Mark has the old track all ripped out. They are gonna start putting the new track in next week. Mr. Fraser confesses that old gravel track has certainly seen better days. I'm really happy for Johnson that he'll have a more modern track now. Now accustomed to a state-of-the-art track and field venue at the university, Mr. Fraser now sees the old high school gravel track as quite antiquated. And after running on the university's track, so does Johnson. After a casual afternoon conversation, Mr. Fraser tells Braden, "It's Friday. Maybe I should head out and get an early start on the weekend." Braden replies, "My shift is about over. I'm headed out soon too." Mr. Fraser and Braden walk out of the building together, running into Coach Athena Layton on the way. Braden tells Coach Layton, "I hear you have a good team coming up this year." Coach Layton replies, "We do. And we stand a really good chance of ticking off Dr. Gregory again next season." Braden replies, "Good. His dumb ass ain't good for nothing anyway." Over the last few years, Coach Layton has gotten quite competitive at psychological warfare. The tribe taught her well. The year after Braden graduated from the university, the sports programs of every college and university in the division were audited, making sure that the requirements are fully met for participation in the division. The university, for some reason, was singled out and put under a high-powered microscope and extensively probed to an unreasonable extent. Transcripts of the athletes were examined, the curriculum and coursework were scrutinized, finances were audited, and the qualifications of the faculty were even brought into question. The auditor's results were even audited by another auditing firm, adding even more fuel to the fire. Coach Layton, who held the position of provost during the years for which the university was being audited, was responsible for the university's budget during that time. The new provost, hit with mounds of paperwork concerning the audit during his first month of employment, was completely unprepared for a full-scale investigation when he walked into the position. Having to temporarily resume her duties as provost, Coach Layton was not very happy during that year. During the audit, Kathy helped Mr. Fraser coach the university's team in the mornings. As it turns out, Dr. Gregory was the person responsible for the full frontal attack on the university's program. Later that year, it was revealed that the university passed the audit with flying colors. Since then, Dr. Gregory has been at the top of the university's shit list. Mr. Fraser comments, "Speaking of Dr. Gregory, I can't wait for the divisional coaches meeting this year." Coach Layton smiles and replies, "Me either, George. I can't wait to hear what Dr. Gregory is going to complain about this year." Mr. Fraser laughs and comments, "Hopefully, it won't be about pollen on our track." Braden asks, "What's all this about pollen on the track?" Mr. Fraser explains, "2 years ago, during the divisional meet, Dr. Gregory complained that there was pollen on the track. It's not like I have any control over the pollen count." Coach Layton laughs and exclaims, "Did Dr. Gregory ever get ticked off at me?" Not hearing about this incident, Braden asks, "Oh yeah. What happened?" Coach Layton explains, "Dr. Gregory complained there was pollen on the track that gets kicked up when the runners run. During the 1,500-meter run, one of the athletes on Dr. Gregory's team had a serious asthma attack and had to be transported to the hospital. Last year, during the annual divisional coaches meeting, Dr. Gregory blamed the guy's asthma attack on the pollen that he alleged to be on our track. So, I pointed out to Dr. Gregory that his runner was at the back of the pack. Then, I told him that, if his runner were more competitive and at the front of the pack where the pollen wasn't being kicked up, he would not have had that problem." Mr. Fraser laughs and tells Braden, "All the other coaches were laughing. Did Gregory ever get ticked off at that?" Braden laughs and replies, "I wish I could have been there to hear that." Arriving at the door, Braden tells Mr. Fraser and Coach Layton, "You guys have a good weekend. I'll catch you guys later." Mr. Fraser replies, "You too. And don't work too hard." Provost Layton tells Braden, "Take it easy. And have a great weekend." Braden heads back to his patrol car and will take one more drive around campus before he leaves. Mr. Fraser and Coach Layton head out for the weekend, which is supposed to be a beautiful one. Mitchell and Hoffa, both working at the television station where Angela Meadows is now a popular sportscaster, head home together on the train after a long week at work. Discussing current events, Hoffa tells Mitchell, "I can't believe our high school track is gone. It looks so barren out there. I think I'm going to miss the old track." Mitchell replies, "I can get that. But the new track will be much better. I went back to the high school and ran a few laps on the track during my senior year at the university. The difference is like night and day. The all-weather surface is much easier to run on." Hoffa asks Mitchell, "By the way, how are the plans for the track dedication coming along?" Mitchell replies, "Our plans are finalized. The only thing we're waiting for is to find out the dedication date. Johnson is hoping the track will be finished before school starts. He's expecting that the dedication will be held during the first week of school. And Angela is ready." Hoffa replies, "That makes sense. If it's done in the middle of the semester, it will get a whole lot less attention." After graduating from the university with a master's degree in communications, Mitchell took a job at the television station where Hoffa and Angela Meadows both work. Taking a year off after graduating high school, when he organized and ran in charity races, Mitchell now works with the television station publicizing such events. Often running in the events himself, Mitchell, who has been training like a madman, is doing what he always wanted to do. Now a nationally seeded runner, Mitchell's last big event was organizing coverage of the Boston Marathon a few months ago, in which he also ran. Finishing in the top 10, Mitchell ran one of his best races ever. Mitchell announces, "Here's our stop." Mitchell and Hoffa get off the train and head to their vehicles. Hoffa curiously asks Mitchell, "Are you ever going to get rid of that opal?" Mitchell replies, "Yeah. When you get rid of your motorcycle." Hoffa replies, "That's not happening anytime soon." Mitchell mentions, "The opal is a good commuter car, and it still runs good. Besides, if anything happens to it, it's no big deal. I've gotten my money's worth out of it." Hoffa starts his motorcycle and tells Mitchell, "I'll catch you in an hour or so." Mitchell and Hoffa head home and get ready for pizza tonight. Later that evening, the tribe meets at the pizzeria for dinner. Now preferring the formal dining area to the informal side of the establishment, everyone is seated together at one long table. Ariana, the waitress, walks in to take everyone's order and asks, "Where are all the kids today?" Paula replies, "They are on vacation." Ariana asks, "On vacation?" Paula explains, "Yeah. That's what we tell them when they stay overnight at their grandparents' house." While Ariana goes around the table taking orders, Eddie asks Braden, "How was your week, bro?" Braden replies, "At work, it's going good. I'm ready to enjoy the weekend. At home, though, I got a big problem that's only getting bigger." Already suspecting he knows what the problem is, Eddie asks, "What's going on this time?" Braden explains, "Ever since that asshole, Chucky, moved in across the street from me, there's been a lot of trouble." Eddie asks, "What did the Chucky do this time?" Braden replies, "Somebody set my garbage can on fire in the middle of the night last Wednesday. It was out by the road, and I know it didn't catch fire all by itself." Eddie replies, "Yeah. That sounds like something the Chucky would do." Wendy tells Eddie, "We have to get the Chucky out of there somehow. That guy is a menace." Hunter even calls Chucky the boogeyman. Paula laughs and asks Wendy, "So, that's where the boogeyman moved to after we bulldozed Second Street?" Wendy replies, "Yeah. It's really funny in a way. Hunter is only 2 years old, and he points to the Chucky's house and says, boogeyman lives there." Paula comments, "He's got that right." Eddie assures Brayden, "We'll figure out a way to get the Chucky out of there, bro." Brayden replies, "I hope we can. It's not like the old days where you can just kick someone's ass and get away with it." Mark comments, "Ain't that the truth?" Chucky has become very sly in the last few years. The police know Chucky is up to something illegal, but there is absolutely no trail of evidence. Without evidence, there is nothing the authorities can do. Chucky's only documented source of income is from his job, which is a stock clerk at a home improvement store. Certainly not earning a sufficient income to afford the house across the street from Brayden, Brayden is quite convinced that Chucky is dealing drugs again. At the other end of the table, Bobby B. asks Hoffa, "Have you seen the high school track recently?" Hoffa replies, "Yeah. It looks like a total wasteland." Erica comments, "I can't wait until the new track is done. I know where I'll be training." Hoffa asks Erica, "Don't they train you enough on the police force?" Erica replies, "No. I sit in a car most of the day. That's not exactly exercise." Bobby B. boasts, "Erica always beats the guys in the physical exam. There's no one who can beat her in the 1 mile run." Erica laughs and tells everyone listening, "And I'm going to continue beating them." Tessa gives Erica a high five, telling her, "You go, girl." Tessa asks Erica, "Have you arrested Chucky's sister recently?" Erica replies, "No. But, the other day, I pulled her over for driving with a learner's permit without a licensed driver in the vehicle. There was also another minor in the vehicle." Tessa asks, "What?" "There were no parents in the car." Erica replies, "Nope. So, I suspended both of their permits and made them walk home. Then, Mrs. Black reported me to the police chief. My dad just laughed." Chucky's sister, Lillian, is now a junior in high school. Learning from Andrew Goldstein, Terry Haynes, and her brother, Lillian has turned out to be a real piece of work. Brayden asks Eddie, "What time are we getting together next weekend?" Eddie replies, "Somewhere around noon. And bring Hunter. He'll have a lot of fun. He can play in the water with the other kids." Brayden tells Eddie, "I can't keep his little ass out of the water. All he wants to do is go in the pool. Before breakfast, he wants to go in the pool. When it's 20 degrees outside, he wants to go in the pool. When it's bedtime, he wants to go in the pool one more time. And somebody's always got to be out there watching him." Mark suggests Mark and Dawn can watch him. Brayden laughs and replies, "Yeah, right. 2 3-year-olds watching a 2-year-old. I can see how that's going to go over." Mark points out, "Yeah. But 2 3-year-olds equal 1 6-year-old. They should be able to take care of it." Mark's sense of humor and logic have not changed much over the years. Over dinner, Brayden asks Eddie, "What's the chance that I can get you to build me and Wendy one of those souped-up Volkswagen buses?" Eddie replies, "We can do that, bro. Bring us a bus, and we'll get the motor for it." Brayden asks, "How fast will it go?" Eddie replies, "Faster than you'd want to drive it, bro. I built one for Richard, using the 3.3-liter engine, and he took it up to 130 miles an hour once. He said it was steady as a rock, but he was afraid to take it any faster than that." Brayden asks, "Where did he drive it that fast?" Eddie replies, "On the road along the beach, in the middle of winter." Brayden asks, "What does it do 0 to 60 in?" Eddie replies, "About 5 seconds. Brayden tells Eddie, "I think I want to get one. It's kind of hard getting Hunter and all his stuff in and out of Wendy's car." Eddie yells down the table to Bobby B, "Yo. Bobby B. Brayden wants a bus." Bobby B yells back, "What color?" Brayden yells back to Bobby B, "Blue, to match my June buggy." Eddie tells Brayden, "Just pick up a bus, bro, and we can get started on it." Eddie and Bobby B have been modifying Volkswagen buses for a few years now and can crank them out quickly. Kurt Richter, the Georgia Tech engineer who helped Eddie with the design, even had Eddie build one for him. Having his own bus, Kurt made a few modifications, which are now incorporated into Eddie's new conversions. Braden laughs and informs Eddie, maybe Mr. Crumb is gonna bring you his piece of shit Volkswagen Beetle to get it running again. Eddie replies, he's still in jail. And besides, I'm not working on his piece of shit anyway. Braden informs Eddie, he's as ain't gonna be in jail for too much longer. He's getting out in a few months. Eddie exclaims, are you serious, bro? Braden replies, yeah. My dad told me about it last weekend. Eddie comments, I wonder if he'll show up at our 10-year reunion. Braden replies, I don't know. That's still about a year away. The word quickly gets around the table that Mr. Crumb, the irate high school principal who made everyone's life so miserable, is getting out of prison in a few months. To say the least, no one is happy to hear the news. Erica asks Kathy, who else is going to be at the party next weekend? Kathy replies, Janice is coming for sure. And Karen Coy is coming. From the high school, Lena and Lynn Burson will be coming, and so will Louis Zeno. And you'll never guess who else will be there. Erica replies, hopefully, it's not one of the troublemakers. Kathy replies, nope. Matt Wood is coming. He used to throw the shot put at the high school. Erica comments, yeah. Bobby has mentioned him before. He plays in the NFL now. As the pizza party winds down, everyone heads out to their cars. In the parking lot, Kathy asks Paula, so, are we still on for cracking the geodes open sometime? Kathy replies, yeah. Eddie took one of them to his chiropractor. The chiropractor x-rayed the geode, and there are a lot of stones inside. Paula whispers, I really hope they're yellow, blue, and red stones. Kathy whispers back, me too. Paula tells Kathy, I'll catch you later. Everyone drives home, only to meet up again next weekend, if not sooner. The next week, on Monday, Eddie arrives at Eddie's service station and will be working alone this week. Bobby B is over at the high school, helping Eddie's brother install the irrigation system for the field events area. Taking a seat in the office, Eddie reviews the three stocks that he is recommending that his friends purchase this month. While Eddie knows his stock picks will increase in value, Eddie also knows that, in about 2.5 years, a crash will occur. Fortunately, Eddie will forewarn his friends of the looming disaster before it occurs. Before any customers show up, Athena Layton drives into the service station. Athena, with a bachelor's degree in exercise science, a master's degree in business administration, and a doctorate degree in finance, has traded her administrative world for a position as a physical education instructor at the university. Since Eddie has been giving Athena stock market advice, Athena and her husband, Mike, have made an enormous amount of money in the stock market. Athena's husband, with a degree in finance, still cannot figure out how Eddie's stock picks never fail. Walking in with a smile, Athena announces, I'm really glad I don't work 8 to 5 anymore. Eddie asks, do you have an easy summer? Athena replies, I do. I'm only teaching 2 classes during the summer semester. One is track. The other is field. And I have a few students for whom I am their faculty advisor for their master's and PhD. But, fortunately, they don't consume much of my time. Eddie replies, that's about as easy as it gets. Eddie asks Athena, are there any interesting thesis topics? Athena replies, as a matter of fact, yes. One of the students who was on the track team, Laurie King, is doing research on leaving the starting blocks. Now curious, Eddie replies, really? Tell me about it. Athena explains, theoretically, in a well-conditioned and well-developed athlete, it should not matter which foot is forward in the blocks. In relying on the strong leg or fast leg, as they are commonly referred to, an imbalance develops which, as we all know, is of no benefit to any world-class athlete. Continuing to accommodate for a strong or fast leg perpetuates any acquired imbalance. Laurie is researching methods to correct the imbalance. Eddie asks, what made Laurie decide to research that topic? Athena replies, we have a hurdler on the team, Paul Harrison, who, because of his height and speed, goes over the first hurdle leading with his right leg and the second hurdle leading with his left leg. And he alternates during the entire race. Paul has neither a strong nor fast leg. They are both equally developed, both physically and neurologically. And he is the fastest on the team out of the blocks. Paul was the impetus for the thesis. Now curious, Eddie asks, does Paul win? Athena replies, always. In the hurdles, the hurdler must have a stride perfectly suited to the distance between hurdles. It is absurd to believe that a 5 foot 8 inch runner and a 6 foot 5 inch runner have the same stride length. For example, in the 400 meter hurdles, most hurdlers take 14 steps between hurdles. But what happens if, say, for example, at the runner's top speed, it would only take 13 steps? The runner would have to either compromise their speed or alternate legs. Eddie replies, I can see that. So, someone running at their top speed with 13 and a half steps between hurdles would probably make a lousy hurdler. Athena agrees, telling Eddie, they'd have to compensate somehow. So, yes, they'd likely lose because they cannot achieve their optimal performance due to the physical constraint of the distance between each hurdle. Eddie observes, you and Mr. Fraser sound like you're doing a lot of research. Athena replies, we are. We are primarily focusing on those areas that have been historically deemed as normal by track and field experts. We feel that certain concepts, such as the fast leg and strong leg out of the blocks, the leading leg in the hurdles, and the strategy in distance races, all need to be revisited. Athena then comments, for some of this research, we have Gary Mitchell to thank. Eddie asks, really? How so? Athena explains, Gary knew exactly how my son, Daryl, ran the mile. After you guys graduated, Daryl practiced with the team during 1 year. During that year, Daryl discovered that, by changing his strategy, his 1,500 meter time could vary by as much as 10 seconds. He eventually found the perfect strategy and, in running his own race, was able to win the gold medal at the Olympics. Eddie replies, I remember that. We all watched him on TV last year. Athena then explains, after George's commencement address during your graduation, we have focused on the athletes running their own race. Eddie replies, just like Mitchell always did. Athena agrees, complimenting Eddie, when you guys ran for the university, all of you were way ahead of the curve. Truth is that when Eddie and the tribe ran in high school, they were all way ahead of the curve. Eddie asks, how does next year look? Athena replies, George and I are quite confident that we'll be back to winning all the medals. We definitely have a high probability of winning all the gold medals at both divisional meets. Eddie replies, that's awesome. Athena explains, to George, only the gold medals count. The year after you guys graduated, at the annual coaches meeting, the other coaches were furious when our team won all the medals. Since then, George really looks forward to listening to them whine and complain at the meeting. Eddie laughs and replies, I can see that. Mr. Fraser really hates to lose. Athena tells Eddie, so do I. During Eddie and Athena's conversation, Captain Richard Hayes drives up and walks into the office, asking Eddie, what's up? Eddie replies, what's up? Athena asks, Captain Hayes, how have you been? Richard replies, I've been really good. And you, Provost Layton? Athena replies, I've been great. But I'm not provost of the university anymore. Richard replies, I knew that. I just keep forgetting. Eddie hands Athena and Richard the most recent list of stocks to buy and sell, and asks, is everything with the stocks working out okay for you guys? Athena replies, it is. Thank you very much again for your investment advice. It's like you already have tomorrow's newspaper. Eddie sighs and replies, you found out my secret. Athena laughs, knowing that Eddie could not possibly have tomorrow's newspaper. Richard replies, same here. Everything's going good. And now that she's home full-time, Sandy has been taking care of the investments and our finances. Eddie, Athena, and Richard catch up for a while, none of them too much in a rush to get to work. Before he heads out, Richard informs Eddie, by the way, one of the officers spotted a guy matching the description of this Andrew Goldstein character. He jumped bail 5 or 6 years ago. If you happen to see him around, let us know. Eddie replies, will do. Recalling hearing the name before, Athena inquires, I remember George mentioning someone named Goldstein. Wasn't he one of the troublemakers from the high school? Richard replies, yes, from years ago. This Goldstein character makes these McCutcheon characters look like a bunch of small-time parking violators. Eddie mentions, yeah, seriously. Andy Goldshit is bad news. We'll just get Braden to rough him up. Richard laughs, saying, those were the good old days, when you guys took care of the department's business the way we would like to. Athena laughs, recalling how Eddie and Mark once threw Mayor Jameson and Frank Gloomer into the red zone like hammers. Hearing the name McCutcheon again, Athena asks Richard, how about Todd and Jeff McCutcheon? Whatever happened to them? Richard explains, those two characters are back on the streets again. With their rap sheets, it's hard for either of them to get a job. This Todd McCutcheon character has been seen quite often down at the beach running in the sand with a few people. With his history of auto theft, the officer patrolling that area has his eyes on him. If either of them has a job, it's working for someone just as shady as they are. Eddie asks, where does McCutcheon live these days? Richard replies, both of these McCutcheon characters are rooming with a few other shady characters on Mason Street, over in Centerville. Mason Street is Centerville's equivalent of Second Street when Maurice Crumb lived there. Athena asks, how about the father? Whatever became of him? Richard replies, he got out of the slammer early about a month ago for good behavior. The word is, out on the street, that he's looking for work and can't find any. Not even the grocery store where this character used to work would rehire him. Athena optimistically comments, I sure hope he keeps up his good behavior and does something legitimate this time. Athena and Richard both head out, and were glad to see each other again. Eddie begins his day, wishing he were at the high school helping with the irrigation system for the new track. But, unfortunately, there is a lot of unfinished work, and the customers want their cars repaired sooner rather than later. If all goes well and Eddie gets his work done early, he might just make it to the high school to help with the project. Right before lunch, a pickup truck drives into the service station. Behind the wheel is a guy named Stephen Wagner, whom Eddie once caught deflating the tires of Ralph Miles' Volkswagen Beetle when they were in high school. During that encounter, Eddie forced Wagner to pump up Ralph's automobile tire with a bicycle pump. Wagner's arms were so sore after that exercise that, for several days, he could not fully extend his forearms. That stunt earned Wagner the nickname of T-Rex for a few weeks. Wagner walks into the service area and asks Eddie, hey, how are you doing? Eddie replies, great. But I don't feel like working today. I'd rather be with my buddies down at the high school track. Wagner replies, I don't know about that. It's going to be a hot one out there today. Eddie tells Wagner, it's really not any cooler in here. All the fans do is blow around the hot air. Wagner tells Eddie, I got the wheels repaired. Do you want to take a look at them? Eddie replies, sure, and walks outside to check out Wagner's work. Examining the expensive aluminum wheels, Eddie tells Wagner, these look really good. I can barely tell where the dings were. Wagner asks Eddie, what happened to them, anyway? Eddie replies, someone crossed the center line and caused the owner to jump the curb to avoid hitting him. So, two of the rims got a little scraped up. Explaining how he repaired the rims, Wagner tells Eddie, I MIG welded an aluminum bead along the damaged area and refinished the surface. Eddie tells Wagner, they look good. And so do the new tires. Wagner informs Eddie, they are all balanced and ready to go. Eddie and Wagner unload the four wheels and go into the office where Eddie pays Wagner for repairing the wheels and installing four new tires. Wagner tells Eddie, your wall of pictures is getting bigger and bigger. Eddie replies, yeah, I know. I need to start another wall. Making Wagner a generous offer, Eddie asks, do you want to be on the wall? It'd be free advertising. Wagner replies, sure. Thanks. Rolling one of the wheels over to Wagner, Eddie tells him, hold the wheel in front of you, and I'll get a photo. Wagner poses, holding the wheel, and Eddie gets a photograph. Eddie tells Wagner, I'll put your picture up on the left side, with the other auto professionals. Wagner takes a closer look at the wall of photos. On the left side of the wall, Eddie has photographs of other automotive professionals. On the wall are pictures of Kurt Richter, Vinny, Jake from across town, Rocky from the Jeep Yard, John Malia, who gave Kathy her Porsche 914 many years ago, and a few others. Wagner tells Eddie, thanks. I really appreciate that. Wagner, who was once a pain in the ass in high school, now runs a tire shop. Today, Eddie and Wagner now get along well. And surprisingly, if anyone can believe it, Ralph Miles is now Wagner's accountant. The next weekend, early Saturday morning in preparation for the party, Kathy walks around the pool area cleaning out the skimmers. Finding a live frog in the skimmer, Kathy yells out to Eddie, I found a froggy. Eddie yells back, I'll get you the bucket. Eddie brings Kathy a 5-gallon bucket, where Kathy puts the frog. Kathy asks the little critter, okay, do you have any friends around here? The frog looks up at Kathy, likely wondering if Kathy is going to eat him. Eddie asks Kathy, are you expecting an answer? Kathy laughs and replies, no. But I'm taking Junior, here, to the duck pond. I'll be right back. Kathy gets in her dune buggy and drives the frog to his new home. While Kathy is away, Eddie checks the pool chemistry, making sure everything is perfect for today's party.